Hello and welcome to When They Popped. I'm Kelsey.
And I'm Mary.
Mary, we are officially 1 month away from Cancun, aka Backstreet Boys' 30th anniversary celebration. How are you feeling?
Terrified. How are you feeling?
Equally terrified. My Amazon cart just like keeps growing and growing with things that I think I'll need. I literally feel like I'm getting ready for like a 3 week camping trip and I need to have essentials on me at all times. Catch us in Cancun and we're going to have so much fun merch for everyone. It's going to be insane. Well, today we have a real treat for you all. We are celebrating 10 songs that are turning 20 this year. Yes, they can almost buy themselves a drink at a bar. And I will need a drink if I do not disclaim that we do not own or claim to own the rights to the songs or performances in this episode. The purpose of these clips is for commentary and critique. Mary, looking at this list, it makes me want to throw up that some of these songs are 20 years old.
I know. And this is such a fun list. We picked such a eclectic group of songs and kind of expanded our genres a little bit. And I'm so excited about it.
Get it started.
Well, the first one is Leave, Get Out by JoJo. And this is JoJo's debut single off her self-titled debut album. And this song was a commercial success. It debuted at number 99, but it chugga-chug, little engine that could, made its way all the way up to number 12 on the Billboard Hot 100. And it stayed on the charts for 12 weeks and eventually was certified gold. Leave, Get Out reached number one on the mainstream top 40 chart, which is like the pop music chart. So JoJo was 13 when this song came out. And at this age, it made her the youngest solo artist to have a number one single in the United States. Like, what an accomplishment.
I didn't know that. That's huge.
A little background on JoJo. When she was young, she appeared on a myriad of kid talent shows on TV. You know, if it was a kid talent show, she did it. She did not seem like she was shy or nervous by any means. And in fact, in her own words, she said, quote, "I had no fear when I was young. I developed fear later in life," end quote. And didn't we all? So JoJo told a story when she was just 9 years old, how she sung her way through security at a Britney Spears concert. And Britney was just a teen herself at this time, but JoJo got backstage and sang a Britney song to Britney. She didn't say which song she sang. I would love to know that little tidbit, but still, oh my God. And just days later, she received a contract from Britney's manager and lawyer at the time, Larry Rudolph, because Britney back in the day had her own production label and they wanted to sign JoJo as Britney's first artist, if you can believe that. Taste. Oh my gosh.
I didn't know any of this.
She told the story during COVID or something. It had never been told before, but she didn't divulge which Britney song she sang and also why she didn't end up signing that contract and moving forward with Team Spears. But she kept pushing forward. And in mid-2003, she competed on America's Most Talented Kid. Taking second place, she lost to Diana DeGarmo, which may be a familiar name from American Idol. However, record producer Vincent Herbert saw her on America's Most Talented Kid and contacted JoJo and asked her to audition for his record label, Blackground Records. At this time, she was 12 years old. She auditioned and signed with Blackground, and Leave, Get Out was the first track that they put out. And following the single's release, JoJo went on her first tour. It was called the Singular Buddy Bash. Oh my God, remember Singular Wireless, that little like orange figure?
Oh yeah, it looked like a Nickelodeon splat.
Yes, it did. And it wasn't just JoJo, also notably Fifi Dobson, Young Guns, Ryan Cabrera, and others were on this adorable little mall tour.
Fifi? Oh my God.
Yes. And they went to 9 malls. So this was really like the beginning of the beginning. But Leave blew up, obviously. And during sessions at AOL, JoJo said of the song that Leave, Get Out is basically a song for all girls just to declare their independence. Because as I'm sure all females can relate to, boys will be boys at any age, and they don't act right. I'm not hating on guys, but they just need to be kept in line every once in a while. And I mean, she was 13 years old, but baby girl hit the nail right on the head.
I can't believe she was 13 years old.
I know. So young. And that was something I noticed rewatching this nostalgia timepiece of a music video. And this was directed by Eric White and choreographed by Lori Ann Gibson. Do you remember Lori Ann from making the
boom
band?
Cat, boom,
yes!
Cat.
Yeah. Yes! Boom, cat, boom, cat, boom, cat, now dance! The Boom Cats live in my mind forever. But this is just a classic music video. It's at the high school. JoJo's sitting by the lockers. She's like singing in the bathroom. She's dancing with some of her like cheerleader friends. She has like the whole Y2K fashion, tank top, hoop earrings, you know, chunky highlights. It's just really a fun rewatch. The video was nominated for Best New Artist at the VMAs and again gave JoJo the recognition of being the youngest VMA nominee. And it was also retired on TRL after spending 50 days on the countdown, including 2 days at number one. And again, the youngest artist to have both a video retired and reach the summit of that chart. Critics generally liked this song. Writing for Prefix, Norman Myers says that he believes JoJo could be a Mean Girls extra, but she has talent and comes off more like a pint-sized Mariah Carey or Christina Aguilera than a hip-shaking Britney clone. While I don't appreciate Britney's slander, I get what he's saying. Like, this girl can sing. Like, how about that final, get out?
Get out! Get out right now.
I'm not even a try, but she really exercises those pipes for us. So in December of 2018, JoJo released a re-record version of Leave Get Out featuring totally reworked vocals and production. This was because JoJo re-recorded the song as well as her albums JoJo and The High Road following a dispute with Black Ground Records, which blocked the song from streaming services. So she released her re-recorded albums and newest music through her own imprint called Clover Music. So this new version is basically Leave Get Out, JoJo's version. In fact, back in the day, JoJo received support from friend Taylor Swift, who referred to the Black Ground situation as fucked up years before facing her own similar battle with her own label over music ownership. Really interesting, the fight that some of these artists have to go through to have their music.
Yes, but I remember it was such a thing. Everyone was like, where's JoJo? Why isn't she coming out with more music? And it was like she was being like held hostage by her label.
Yes, yes. This is such a great song. Baby girl, literally baby girl, like 13-year-old, kicked down the door, showed us her pipes right off the bat with this first single. I love JoJo. Even her like independent non-single stuff is so good. Her cover of Marvin's Room.
Fuck that new girl that you like so bad. She's not crazy like me. I bet you like that.
Or the song Paint. Disaster. She is so talented and has fought consistently tooth and nail to stay true to herself, and you just gotta respect that.
Do you remember her MTV Cribs?
No.
So it happened in Massachusetts. And I was like, wait, is she from Massachusetts? Like, well, that's interesting. And it came out years and years later that that wasn't her house, that she was living in an apartment with her mom at the time, I believe. I think I'm remembering this correctly. And it was like their cousin or their family friend's house or something that they ended up showing on Cribs. And if you rewatch it, I think it's on YouTube, it's so sparse and there's like three pairs of shoes in the closet. And she's like, that's because we didn't live there. Like, we just brought our stuff there and had the MTV crew like film there. Also, justice for JoJo, she made her Broadway debut last year in Moulin Rouge. So JoJo's back, baby. And her TikToks are really cute. She does like a day in the life while she's getting ready for her shows. And I just don't know how those Broadway people do it.
Oh my God, like every day.
Every day, sometimes twice a day. It's crazy.
Yep. Sundays.
You know what I'm doing on Sunday? Nothing. And if I'm doing anything, it's listening to the next song on our list. How's that for a segue? It's Sugar Sugar by Baby Bash featuring Frankie J.
You got me lifted, feeling so gifted. Sugar, how you get so fly? Sugar, sugar, how you get so fly? Sugar, sugar, how you get so fly?
this song was the second and final single from Baby Bash's third studio album called The Smokin' Nephew, which came out in 2003. This is his highest charting song on the Billboard 100. It reached number 7, and it actually led to him being signed by Universal. So, holy shit, this song changed Baby Bash's life. I would love to hear your thoughts on this song, Mary. To me, when I hear it, I think of going to school, going from school, going to dances, coming home from dances. It was just always on the radio and such a good vibe.
Oh, yeah. For me, what makes this song is Frankie J. I know it's like he's the feature, but like his voice is just smooth as butter. And I just love how his voice is paired and contrasted really nicely with Baby Bash's rap. I love this part. I ain't worried about a thing. I just hit me a lick. I got a fat sack and a Super fly chicken. All of these songs were just so nostalgic. There is one of them, and I will tell you which one it was when we get there, that I listened to 8 times today. It literally brought me back to such an incredible memory. I don't know. This is another good one.
Yeah, I can like smell my Juicy Couture, my velour zip up when I hear this song. And you mentioned Frankie J, amazing collab, and Baby Bash is, I feel like, best known for his songs that are collaborations. His fourth album, we got a Akon feature on that, Baby I'm Back. Don't let no father, baby I'm back, yeah. I'm here to cater to you. Anything that you want me to, I'll do it. Oh, this song, also so nostalgic. I mean, radio hit. And then after that, his next album was called Cyclone, which gave us a single by the same name featuring T-Pain, aka the ultimate middle school dance song. Oh my God.
I remember listening to the song and being like, how does one move it? Like, I have to dance like a cyclone, but I just feel like I'd be going in circles.
Lord knows the girls at my middle school tried their hardest.
Oh, you sure did. I did too.
But like, how fun. And Baby Bash is one of those artists who has all these amazing collaborations, and those are the songs that like he's best known for. But what an amazing talent.
He's good. I'm going to pivot now and surprise nobody with my next song. Another song that is turning 20 in 2024. It makes me want to throw up because I love the song so much and I can't believe how old it is. And that is Every Time by Britney Spears. This was her third single from her fourth album, In the Zone, and it peaked at number 15 in the United States. It stayed there for 4 weeks and was certified platinum. Little background on this song. After Britney and Justin's infamous relationship ended in 2002, Britney kind of established a friendship with one of her background singers, Annette Artani. And according to Annette, their relationship grew out of commisery because they both were going through really tough romantic times. And they really turned to each other in this time of being newly single and starting over. And so they started to write songs together. And iconically, they traveled to Donatella Versace's mansion at Lake Como in Italy. And that's where they actually wrote a large portion of the song Every Time. It's this piano-driven pop ballad. And on its face, it seems to be like a plea for forgiveness for hurting her former love. And I'm a little less convinced of what the meaning is of this song. You know, everyone thought it was kind of her apology to Justin. But now, I'm not so sure after the release of her book.
Right, like what would she have to apologize for?
Right, because what did she have to apologize for? Thank you, Kelsey. So even more impressive about this song is that Britney composed the music herself and co-wrote the lyrics with Annette. Like, I'm shook. I was not the only one that was shook. Every Time received universal acclaim from music critics. They praised its lyrics, the composition, and Britney's delicate, breathy vocals. Many deemed it amongst the highlights of In the Zone. The accompanying music video was directed by legend in his own right, Dave Chappelle. It features Britney seemingly playing a version of herself. She's fighting with her boyfriend and she's hounded by the paparazzi. We see her hit her head on a camera in all the craziness. And as a result, she loses consciousness and seemingly starts to drown in her bathtub after bleeding from this head wound. In the hospital, doctors fail to resuscitate her, while simultaneously a child is born in the next room. The implication was that she had been reincarnated, or that's what many interpreted it to be. However, now, as I was saying, this part has other people guessing about kind of the intention and the message behind this song. As in The Woman in Me, Britney told a story of feeling pressured to have an abortion. And people have kind of wondered if this is maybe an apology to the baby. You know, who knows? But she says, "I guess I need you, baby," as she's watching this baby being born. I don't know. What do you think, Kelsey? Is it more complex than just what people originally thought?
I was so confused the first time I saw this music video. I was like, why is she in a hospital? What's going on? Like, at first I thought it was maybe like her dying, sort of like a Brian in the hospital for Show Me the Meaning of Being Lonely. Show me the meaning of being lonely. I kind of got those vibes. And then I was like, wait, why is there a baby? Like, what's going on? I feel like Britney is so much deeper, and the meaning of her songs are so much deeper than anyone gave her credit for at the time. Yeah. And only now, because of her book, are we able to see the deeper meaning.
Exactly. To think that it's just an apology to Justin for whatever is laughable given all the information that we have now. The original concept of the video was even darker, in which Britney died from a drug overdose. That was the original plan, but they scrapped that because they received a lot of criticism from public groups. They just believed it could be perceived as a glamorization of suicide, which I do understand that. Yeah. This was right before it started to kind of tip on the downward spiral of what was going on in Britney's life. And it's kind of a hard video to watch, knowing what was kind of around the corner for her. Everyone knows the song, and it's been covered by artists like Kelly Clarkson, Louis Capaldi, but my favorite, and let me tell you, I screamed in the movie theater when I heard this, but this was when James Franco sang it in the 2013 film Spring Breakers.
This one's by a little-known pop singer by the name of Miss Britney Spears. One of the greatest singers of all time, and an angel if there ever was one on this earth.
Our love was strong. Why carry on without me? Every time I try to fly, I fall without my wings. I feel so small. Yes, I need you, baby.
What can I say about this song? I have so many words and not enough words. The fact that Britney wrote this ballad of all the songs in her discography, I just get emotional.
This is like just the little sad. Like, it sounds like a music box, like a little bell. Like, I feel like I had a music box that literally had that opening. It is super sad. I don't really listen to this song that often because it's so sad. Should we have a little pick me up with our next song? Change the pace?
Hit me.
Make it a little more upbeat. Well, Mary, are you thirsty? Because our next song is Milkshake. This came from Khalees's third studio album, aptly named Tasty. This song was written and produced by the Neptunes, love, as Max Martin once said, and then Pharrell happened. And speaking of Britney, this song was originally offered to Britney Spears for In This Moment.
She passed on this. What are we doing?
I can't imagine anyone else singing this song, though. I'm so glad Khalees got it. She really just killed it. And it started this whole national, dare I say, global debate about what did she mean by milkshake? What does milkshake stand for? I feel like we all just like inherently knew, like the girls that get it. But according to Kalise, milkshake was used as a metaphor for, quote, something that makes women special. And then years later, she told The Observer that, quote, it means whatever people want it to. It was just a word we came up with on a whim. But then the song took on a life of its own. I just thought milkshake stood for like swag. Like she's just saying like my essence, my, as the kids say now, Riz. My Riz brings the boys to the yard.
It sounds like you were correct.
Or just like being hot generally.
Yeah. Okay. Wow. I learned something new today.
That's so funny. Well, she keeps saying like, we took on a life its own. Like, we don't really know what it means. It kind of reminds me of the debate around Zig Zig Ah with the Spice Girls. Like, they know what it means. Kalise knows what she meant by milkshake. Mm-hmm. So we are all left to fill in the blank. But I feel like that just adds to the lore and makes it more fun and made it very confusing to explain to my dad, who asked, what is this song about? Like, I don't know, Dad. It's about having a good attitude. And like, people are attracted to happy people.
Oh my God, you had a very different take on this song than I did.
Well, that was what I told my parents.
Oh, okay. Okay. Got
it. So Milkshake peaked at number 3 on the Billboard Hot 100. This was Kalise's highest charting single to date. And even though it didn't reach number 1, I mean, we already touched on this, it made such an impact. We all know this song. It was in the Mean Girls soundtrack. And oh man, when that song comes on, like, it just sets the tone. You just know that everyone is hot in the scene if this music is playing in the background. Like, I can't explain it.
It's the beat. There's something about like the dun 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 dun.
It's playful. Sexy. It's fun. Nice. It's sexy. It's everything. It's everything. It was nominated for a Grammy in 2004, and The Observer named it the best single of 2004. VH1 ranked it number 61 on its list of the 100 greatest songs of the 00s, and I can't disagree with that. Immediately, everybody loved this song, even the critics. So that noise that you were talking about, that dun 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 dun, that is an instrument called a darbuka. And it is played in a rhythm that's similar to like a belly dance. And the critics really loved the unique production. They called it a lusty party anthem. They called it thick and creamy, just like a milkshake.
Yeah, that's where my head was.
This is... Honestly, though, this is like the first time that I agree with the critics because they loved it. And The music video for this is really fun. She's in like an old timey diner getting a milkshake, of course. And she looks so hot and amazing. And it features a cameo from Nas, to whom Kalise was married for 9 years. And they have a son together. They originally met in September 2002 at Diddy's MTV Video Music Awards after party. And what I do remember from their relationship is her wedding gown. It was green chiffon. Oh. She started the non-white wedding dress trend. So they divorced, and Nas's album cover art for his 2012 Life is Good album, 3 years after their divorce, features an ode to their wedding day. He's holding her green wedding dress in his hand, and he's wearing a white tuxedo suit like he was on their wedding day. Some really dark details have come out about their marriage since. Kalise has revealed that it was physically and emotionally abusive, and she really credits getting pregnant with her son for giving her the courage to leave the marriage. He has refuted all of those claims and said it was like mutually just a really toxic situation, but then he kind of like publicly tried to get back with her when that album came out. Sounds like it was a really difficult time for Kalise, and I'm really happy that she found happiness elsewhere. In 2014, she remarried a photographer named Mike Mora. They have children together, and sadly, he passed away in 2022 from stomach cancer.
Terrible.
I know. Kalise has had a rough go, but it seems like she is living her best life on a farm. She went from topping the charts to living at a remote farm outside LA that she manages. She started a hot sauce brand in 2015. She's also the co-owner of a farm in Colombia that really focuses on sustainable growth of coffee, tomatoes, and produce. Like, Farmer Kalise, I love it.
I had no idea she wore so many hats.
She is the ultimate queen.
Well, let's talk about another queen, and that is Christina Milian and her 2004 single, Dip It Low. Oh, this one makes me excited too. It's her first single from her second album, but her first US released album, if that makes sense. It's called It's About Time. Dip It Low was written by Polly Paul and Tedra Moses, with Neo working on vocal arrangements. The main version of the song also has a feature with Fabolous. Pop the pop that thing. I might stop the shop and cop you things. You know I drop the top and hop that thing. Sometimes stop my bop to pop my thing. Oh my god, I love Fabolous from this era and always thought his features added a nice little pizzazz to songs.
Fabolous is fabulous.
But Christina was going through a bit of a transformation at this time. She felt that her label, Def Jam, was kind of having her straddle this line between girl and woman. Age-old struggle that our pop princesses go through.
I'm not a girl. Not yet a
woman. But she thought it was inauthentic that she was being forced to play both parts, basically. And Dip It Low was meant to show that she was not the same 18-year-old girl that we all saw in the AM to PM. That was something that did trickle over to America. And to be fair, AM to PM had me by the throat. I thought that was such a banging pop song, so good. And I couldn't find it anywhere. That was like what was the bummer, because it wasn't released in America. So Christina decided she had to create this new image for her new album, It's About Time. So she lightened her hair. She was really inspired by Janet Jackson, who was constantly changing and updating her look. It's About Time, the album, peaked at number 14 on the Billboard album charts. It also received a Grammy nomination for Best Contemporary R&B Album.
Hell yeah.
Dip It Low remains Christina's biggest single in the United States to date. It was certified gold and is her only single to reach the top 10 of the Billboard Hot 100. Dip It Low was also nominated for the Grammy Award for Best Rap Sung Collaboration in 2005, losing to the toughest of competition at the time, Yeah, by Usher Baby.
Usher Baby.
Yeah, I mean... Yeah.
I mean, yeah. Yeah. There was some drama with this song, which sucks because it's her most successful song and it has a little bit of a cloud over it. In 2005, Thomas Torino, Larry Crook, and Dan Dickey sued Christina over Dip It Low, claiming that it contained a sample from a track they released in 1983 called La Sarina. The lawsuit claimed that songwriter and producer Polly Paul heard the La Sarina album in a record store, liked it, and sampled 12 seconds of it for Dip It Low. It's repeated in a loop throughout the entire song. It's very similar. So apparently, Thomas Torino, Larry Crook, and Dan Dickey won and recovered over $1 million from Christina Milian and the record label, etc. However, this was far from over, because in 2006, Christina then sued Polly Paul, the writer, being like, what the hell? Because she just got sued and lost over this song. And she claimed that Polly very definitely assured her that there were no samples whatsoever in Dip It Low. And like, what the hell? It kind of sucks that she's held accountable if he hears a song in a record store that she's never heard of in her life and decides to use it in her song and says, oh no, I just came up with this. Like, that's kind of messed up.
He threw her under the bus.
She sued him. He countersued her and the label. It went back and forth. It was really ugly. This has since been settled out of court, but this was like a years-long saga and expense that she was drugged through with this song. And it makes me sad because Dip It Low is such a freaking bop.
Ugh, Dip It Low, Pick It Up Slow.
I was like taking notes. I was like, okay, these songs were my education.
This is the slut drop.
I was taking detailed notes. These people raised me.
This was the original bend and snap.
I think I dropped something on the floor that I need to pick up. So you bend and snap. See?
Truly the precursor to. What's next? I'm excited for this one.
Okay, we're gonna pick up the pace with Salt Shaker by the Ying Yang Twins. Two 2004 was an amazing year for rap singles. So we get the Ying Yang Twins, Salt Shaker, from their third studio album, which was called Me and My Brother. It was produced by Lil Jon, and the song reached the top 10 in the U.S. It peaked at number 9. It didn't get to number 1, but whatever. We'll forgive them for that, because this song culturally made an impact that cannot be understated. This was the biggest hit of the Ying Yang Twins' career, and the official remix to this song just pops off. It features Lil Jon and the East Side Boys, Murphy Lee, Fat Joe, and Juvenile. I mean, that is a laundry list of legends, if you ask me.
Oh, I love Murphy Lee's verse in this.
Shake it like a soft shake. Shake it like a soft shake. Maybe we can talk later.
Maybe we can talk later.
Maybe we can talk later. I love the remix.
So the 2000s, we got Shake It Like a Polaroid Picture.
Shake it like a Polaroid picture. Hey, yeah.
And then we got Shake It Like a Salt Shaker. And if I had to pick one of the two, I would pick Shake It Like a Salt Shaker. So yeah, another inappropriate bop that we were all singing and dancing to at our middle school dances. But none of us knew what a milkshake was. None of us knew what a salt shaker was. Like, all these metaphors went right over our head. So let's talk about the Ying Yang Twins a little bit. Their real names are Kane and D-Rock. They're not twins. They're not even brothers.
Really? I would have lost that bet.
So they debuted in the year 2000, and they rose to mainstream popularity in 2003 because they collabed with our girl Britney on In The Zone. I got that boom boom.
Shout it! We finna go to the club and get crunk with Britney. Hey!
Sade.
And other hits that they gave us to bless our middle school dances were Wait, the Whisper Song.
Hey, how you doing, love mama? Let me whisper in your ear. Tell you something that you might like, dear.
Shake.
Shake, 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 shake,
shake, shake, shake, shake, shake, shake, shake, shake, shake, shake, shake, shake,
shake, shake, shake, shake, shake, shake, shake, shake, shake, shake, shake, shake, shake, shake, shake, shake,
Can we talk about Shake? I love Shake.
Oh my God. Okay, this song, it's like just like a noise, like on repeat, it's like blah.
Shake, 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 shake.
And it's like da 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 da. Just like one like brah, weird.
Brah.
Yeah, like these like noises on repeat, and it's like so simple and weird, but so good.
Oh my God, shit, shake. When that song comes on in the club, like, you can't tell me anything. Goodbye.
Bye.
Also, the Ying Yang Twins are still like such a big deal in New Orleans. I guess that they've received notoriety for their song Halftime, Stand Up and Get Crunk. Because this is played at Saints home games after most touchdowns. So it's like their own little game song. Isn't that hilarious?
I know that song. I love that for them. They live in infamy still to this day. Y2K Kings.
Y2K Kings. And I also just love that Get Crunk was like a thing that we used to say to each other casually.
Well, let's talk about Crunk. And let's talk about some kings of Crunk. To start my next one, all you need is the first 0.3 seconds of this song to be transported back to going absolutely feral on the dance floor back in your sweaty middle school gym. Yes, I'm talking about Get Low by Lil Jon and the East Side Boys.
3, 6, 9, 10, 10, 10.
You might remember, Kelsey, I told you I listened to a song 8 times today. And it actually was this one. And just as a full umbrella over some of these songs, like Get Low, like Shake, like Salt Shaker, they're all like 5.5 minute long. Like, these are like real ass songs. Like, they are not leaving us wanting more. They are giving us the start, the middle, and the end. I just hate how music is all like 1 minute and 30 seconds today. And I appreciate the length of these songs. rant over. Let's talk about Get Low. It's the second single off Kings of Crunk, which is actually the fourth studio album by Lil Jon and the Eastside Boys. Kings of Crunk debuted at number 15 on the charts, and it was also the highest selling independent album for both 2003 and 2004. Get Low peaked at number 2 on the Billboard Hot 100, and it was number 5 on the top hot R&B and hip hop songs of 2003. It's known as a breakthrough song for the crunk genre. I mean, Kings of Crunk, hello. This song helped crunk become mainstream. And Get Low is everywhere. It's at your cousin's wedding. It's at your middle school dance. It's in TV shows. It's in movies like White Chicks, Coach Carter. And my personal favorite, we saw it in The Proposal, where Sandra Bullock's character raps it to Betty White and has like a little dance break.
Let me see you get low. You scared. You scared. Drop your ass to the floor. You scared. You scared. See you get low. You scared. You scared. No, you scared. You scared. Stop. Woo. Now wiggle it. Now stop. Woo.
This song was truly just like a cultural moment. We were just all so like shocked by it. I think that's a part of it. We were just like, what is being said? Like, it was so vulgar. It was so dirty. And I just never thought that the line, like, to the window, to the wall, to the sweat drop down my ball, down these bitches crawl. Would be such a profound lyric of my youth, but it was. It was. And when they would say, let me see you get low, you scared, you scared. Let me see you get low, you scared, you scared. Turn that ass to the floor, you scared, you scared. I can guarantee you I was absolutely terrified because I know shit was about to go off and I was not doing it right.
I feel like it was like our YMCA. In the 70s, they all did the YMCA dance, and we did To the Window, To the Wall.
But it's like YMCA is literally about a boys' club, and ours is about like sweat dripping down a man's testicle.
Still a boys' club, just like, a different kind.
Let me play with your panty line. Can I play with your panty line? There's just so many, like, great.
I'm telling you, it was like our siren call when we were in middle school.
You just dropped everything and ran towards the music.
You pointed to a window and you pointed to a wall. Like, you had to stop, drop, and roll. Like, remember Drop Everything and Read in elementary school last year?
Yes.
You stopped, dropped, and pointed to a window, pointed to a wall.
Stop, drop, kaboom, baby. What's our next song?
Oh my God, our next one is not as iconic, but I fucking loved it. No. So we're going to slow it down a little bit with Chingy's Holiday Inn. What you doing? Nothing chilling at the Holiday Inn. Me and my peeps want to drink over your friends. Feel on each other and sip on some ham. One thing leading to another, let the party begin. This song features Ludacris and Snoop Dogg. This was the second single off Chingy's debut album called Jackpot, which I love. Jackpot, Chingy, ching chingling. Following his 2000 debut single, Right There, which, oh! I like the way you do that right there, right there.
Switch it into your walk and let down your hair, down your hair. Chingy really had a moment in this era.
He owned the year 2003-2004. So everyone loved this song. One review that I want to call out is Nathan Rabin of the AV Club. He said that Chingy was able to hold his own opposite Ludacris and Snoop Dogg, saying, quote, it seems less like two icons helping out a scrappy newcomer than like a collaboration among three bona fide superstars. I can't imagine a better compliment. And, you know, Chingy was a newcomer to the scene. He toured as an opening act with his fellow St. Louis rapper Nelly in 2002, and then he signed with Ludacris's record label Disturbing the Peace that same year. So he came up really quickly, and I think it's just so cool that, you know, Luda signed him and then he worked with him on this song. I just love that there's so much support within the industry for newcomers. So Mary, I'm curious for your thoughts on this statement as a self-proclaimed hotel snob. In 2020, Entertainment Weekly wrote that the legacy of the song was one that increased the, quote, coolness factor, end quote, of Holiday Inn, the hotel chain based in Atlanta. I'd love to hear your thoughts on that and if you agree.
Well, I guess this song made Holiday Inns cool in theory. Like back in the day, I was like, ooh, this is what I'll do in college. Like there'll be parties at the Holiday Inn.
No, you
like,
did not. You did not.
I thought maybe there would be like parties that I would
What, you thought it would be like the Laguna Beach black and white party that they
yes, had at the Holiday Inn. This song made Holiday Inns a moment. And I don't know if they will ever get that moment back, but they were a moment in this time.
Mary has spoken. Holiday Inns had a moment. But I mean, you don't pass one without thinking of this song.
Oh, I love the back and forth. The chorus of the song is like literally a phone conversation. It's a piece of art. Put it in the Louvre.
It's performance art, honestly.
Yes.
It's theater. So the video is also really fun. It was nominated for MTV Music Video Award for Best Hip Hop Video, but unfortunately it lost to Outkast's Hey Ya, which we can't really blame them for. I mean, Chingy was just it in the mid-2000s, and to date he has 8 platinum certified records and collabs. Wow. And he's released 3 albums with Ludacris's Disturbing the Peace record label, but when his 4th album Hate It or Love It didn't do so hot on the charts, I think it peaked at like 84 or something. Disturbing the Peace's parent company, Def Jam, pulled its budget, and Chingy made management decisions that, quote, became a bad idea in the long run. And by 2007, he was nowhere to be found. He like effectively disappeared. So where is he now? Well, he's still making music, and lately it's been way more vulnerable in content and tone. He told BuzzFeed that he's been studying astrology and getting in touch with his higher self. He's now a father to 2 sons and a daughter, and he's working on new music that, quote, tells people how to dig deeper into your inner self. In 2022, he dropped a new single called Can't Blame Me.
Wanna blame me? I'm good to stay up on my bed. You can't blame me. For holding it down, keeping shit lit.
Which he said is giving listeners insight to the sabotaging people did to me in this industry. So clearly this is a man who feels like he was wronged. And from the outside standing in with what limited information I have, I'd have to agree with him. This single debuted his Chinglish era.
Oh.
He told People magazine that his intention is to capture honesty in his music and share it with his listeners.
I love that for him. I love, this was like a boy band. Like this song was like a collab of the It Boys of the rap world, kind of like you said, and he was the hot newcomer. And what a cultural moment this song was for them and for the Holiday Inn Corporation. And I am grateful for this song. Another like 5-minute song, by the way.
What happened to longer songs? They're either
lazy.
Like too long now. Well, except for Taylor Swift, 10 minutes.
But that's one
that's
song.
Lot. Every song now, like Charlie XCX has a new song and it's like less than 2 minutes. And I can't. I love her. Everything she does is amazing. But like, how could you do this to me? Question mark.
We need multiple pre-chorus bridges. We need a pitch change. We need 2 verses. Like, how do you fit that in 145?
You don't.
I agree. I'm really angry about it. I think about it a lot.
Okay, Mary, what's our next song on the list?
Don't get me started. Okay, totally different genre. Are you ready? Because I'm ready. And that's Jets, Are You Gonna Be My Girl?
I said, are you gonna be my girl?
Now, this is the first single off their debut album, Get Born. It peaked at number 20 in Australia and reached the top 20 in Canada, Ireland, New Zealand, and the United Kingdom. In the US, it reached number 21 on the Billboard Hot 100. It was their first top 40 hit and their highest charting single to date. It has sold over 1 million copies in the United States. It was certified gold. Now, this song was written by Nick Chester and Cameron Muncy, and these are 2 members of Jet, and I apologize if I mispronounced those names, but the song is often cited for similarities to Iggy Pop's Lust for Life. Listen to this comparison of the drum pattern and the guitar riff. However, according to Chris Chester, who's Nick's brother and another member of Jet, Iggy Pop himself admitted to them that their riff was a ripoff or like inspired by a Motown beat. And Jet completely agrees. And they're like, we were also inspired by Motown. And Chris said, if you listen to a song like Can't Hurry Love by the Supremes, you'll find it's a lot closer to Are You Gonna Be My Girl than Lust for Life ever was. Here's the intro to You Can't Hurry Love. Honestly, I hear the similarities between all three, and I just feel like they're all borrowing from each other and from Motown ultimately, but whatever.
But Mary, like, can you say that there's too many similarities to too many things? Like, no one person can be sued for, like, copying?
Probably. And someone has to want to take on that litigation, too. And music, from what I've heard, it's very difficult because, as you said, Kelsey, there's only so many melodies. There's only so many certain variation of melodies. You're going to hear similar melodies in similar songs. Someone really has to want to take that on. And it seems like they had a good relationship with Iggy Pop. I mean,
he wasn't coming at them and like, you copy
me. No. It was like a friendly conversation from what I got in the interview. But as I told you, Nick and Cam from Jet wrote this song. When talking about the background to it, Nick said he used to live in a bungalow with only two rooms, a bedroom, and a toilet. So we'd often sit on the toilet, lid down, and play around on his guitar. That's where Are You Gonna Be My Girl came from. He wrote it somewhere between, he says, the ages of 17 and 19, when one of his main life goals was, quote, trying unsuccessfully to shag as many girls as possible, end quote. And he wrote this song while frustrated about a girl. And the original hook was, she's just like every other girl, instead of, are you going to be my girl? But the bandmates didn't like that as much, thought it was too negative, and convinced him to make it more positive. How about that intro? That cough, that like, that was an accident in the demo, but the producers liked it and thought it should be in the final mix. However, Nick refused to fake the cough. He is not a faker. He is authentic. So they just copied the original oopsie cough from the demo and put it in the final mix. And that's what we have. This song for me is a garage band must perform. Like that last, are you gonna be my girl? Oh man, I thought,
yeah.
All
right.
My poor parents, poor everybody who was exposed to that. I was hitting the note in my mind.
I feel like this song was in an iTunes commercial or something when the branding was people dancing and their bodies were just like a shadow and there was like bright colors behind them. Like when the iPod first came out, I feel like this was the song in the commercial. It just reminds me of like the ultimate commercial song. It's so upbeat. It's so fun. And even the beginning when they're like, a go. It's just so fun.
The nuances of it, the little things make it so special.
I also, sorry to come back to diction in every episode, but I love the way that they, I feel like I can hear them like stumbling around a guitar and playing like over the microphone and like kind of swaying with the music. I just feel like they conveyed a lot of motion in their voices, if that makes sense. Just so much energy behind it. It was such a fun song.
I feel like Jet wasn't around that long, but I also really liked Cold Hard Bitch, their next single off that album.
I love
that
song. Cold hard bitch, just a kiss on the lips, and I was on my knees. I'm waiting, give me. Okay, our next song is, oh God, we keep saying that these are like cultural reset iconic songs, but I mean, 2004 was an incredible year. I'll say it again. And that's especially true because we got this song, and it is Tipsy by Jaquan. Everybody, you can bitch get tipsy. This is another amazing rapper coming out of St. Louis, just like Chingy. I mean, try to tell me that this wasn't the song of the year, the song of our lives, the soundtrack to high school. In the beginning, when they say teen drinking is very bad. Yo, I got a fake ID, though.
Teen drinking is very bad. Yo, I got a fake ID, though.
And then we get the heavy boom clap.
Yeah.
The heavy breathing.
Yeah.
I mean, I can't imagine a better lead single from his debut studio album to come out of the gates with a number one hit. And I do believe that it's also one of the few, if not only, one hit wonders on our list today, unfortunately. But this song was just the ultimate house party song. Whether you drank or not, it just got the party started. And the music video also has the same vibe. In the music video, I'm sure you can imagine Jaquan has a house party, and it pays homage to House Party the movie, Risky Business. And I mean, memorizing the lyrics was so easy because most of it was just counting anyways.
One, here comes the two, to the three, to the four. Everybody drunk out on the dance floor.
So where did he go after such a promising start? Like, what the hell happened to Jaquan? Well, his album Hood Hop did well. It entered the Billboard 200 at number 7. But then he left his label, which was called So So Def, after its release. And all of his material after that just failed to chart. And it was 2010 before Jay was back in headlines because fans reported him missing. But then he quickly debunked it on social media. It was such a weird little flash in the pan. Like, where is Jaquan all of a sudden? Not unlike Kate. Where is Kate?
Where is Kate?
Where is Kate Middleton, you guys? I can't believe it took us this long to talk about that. Hashtag where's Kate? Hashtag we don't know. So in 2018, BET sat down with Jay to talk about his rise to fame and then his step back from the spotlight. And oh my God, the adversity that this guy faced at such a young age, it's really honestly overwhelming. He shared that Jaquan left home at the age of 12, and thankfully his uncle took him in when no other family members would, and he lived in his uncle's Buick. This is a 12-year-old little boy. Like, it really breaks my heart. It sounds like he's just had a rough go since then. He just hasn't been able to really get back in the game. It's just so awful and so sad. So sorry to leave it on a sad note.
You know, we can never stick to our promise to do 5 songs each. So we figured we would do a couple key honorable mentions. And we would be remiss if we did not discuss the man of 2004 and also a pretty big man of this year as well, musically and performance-wise, and that is Usher. And in 2004, he held 4 spots in the top 25 of the Billboard year-end top 100 singles. 4! And not only did he hold those 4 spots, but he also held the top 1 and 2 spots. And that's the 2 songs I want to wrap up with an honorable mention. So, let's talk about Yeah!
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 Yeah. Yeah. Okay, whatever.
Yeah, yeah. Next thing I knew, you was all up on me screaming. Yeah, 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 yeah. Yeah.
This, baby, was the lead single off Usher's 2004 album, Confessions. Yeah, topped the Hot 100 chart for 12 consecutive weeks before being dethroned by Usher's own follow-up single, Burn. Another example of someone's only competition being themselves. Yeah was the longest running number one single in 2004. It was certified 13 times platinum. It was on the charts for a total of 45 weeks. It was Usher's 4th number one single. Yeah won a Best Rap Song Collaboration Grammy at the 47th Grammy Awards, and it was also nominated for Record of the Year. This song also ranked 2nd on the Billboard Hot 100 2000 to 2009 decade end chart. So for a period of 9 years, this was ranked the 2nd best song of that entire period. We Belong Together was number 1.
Oh, baby, baby, we belong together.
I feel okay about that. I mean, let Mimi have her crown. So also at the 2004 VMAs, Usher won his first 2 awards with Best Dance Video and Best Male Video for this song. So let's talk about how we got Yeah, because it almost wasn't Yeah.
What was it?
Freak-a-lake. Almost. Let's talk about it. So in 2003, Usher submitted Confessions to the label. He was like, I'm done. This is perfect. I'm ready. However, the president of the label at the time, L.A. Reid, listened to the tracks and he felt it lacked a song that had that lead single energy, you know, BDE, but LSE. So L.A. Reid clearly knew what he was doing. And so in light of this, he sent Usher back to record a few more tracks to get that lead single. And that's when Lil Jon came in. And Lil Jon remembered, quote, Usher needed a single. They had Burn. Burn was hot, but they needed that first powerful monster. That's when I came in. End quote. And yeah, yeah, was definitely the freaking monster that they were looking for.
Monster. Wow.
So several months prior to Lil Jon getting involved with this, he was working with Jive to help produce tracks for Mystical. And he did about 15 tracks for Mystical, and Mystical only selected 2 out of 15. So Lil Jon had a bunch of leftover songs to kind of give out to other artists. However, without Lil Jon's knowledge, Jive Records gave one of his leftover tracks to Petey Pablo, eventually being what we know as Freak Leak, incredible song. So Lil Jon didn't know this happened, though, and he thought he still had Freak Leak to hand out. And so he was like, Usher, I got your monster first single. Here's Freak Leak. But eventually this mistake came out because apparently it was being released on like Southern Radio with Petey Pablo, and Lil Jon had no idea. And Petey was like, it's too late. I'm not giving this up. It's mine. Which, like, I get why he put his foot down. It's a great song, and it's probably his biggest song, to be honest. So, ever undeterred, Lil Jon jumped back into the studio and created I'd like to say, even more catchy, even better song than Freak Leak, which is Yeah. And yeah, so... The label wasn't sure because they were like, you know, Burn is such a strong single. And Usher was one of the most unsure because he really wanted this album to be like an R&B heavy album, which it is. But it was kind of counterintuitive to the message to come out with Yeah when you want this to be like your R&B baby making confessions type album. And A&R rep KP Prather commented, quote, Burn being a great song is one thing, but it's one of them things where people said it's strong, but can we make history with that? At the end of the day, you want an event, end quote. And Yeah was a freaking event.
I mean, this is like the song, I would say this and Get Low, that you know you have to put on a playlist when you're with your friends from high school or when it comes on at a wedding. Like, you have to go to the dance floor. Like, it's illegal to sit down when you hear this song. And it just makes me so proud of Usher that he did the Super Bowl halftime show. Mm-hmm. And these songs were at their peak 20 years ago. I mean, the staying power that that takes and the joy that I saw scrolling Twitter when he performed. Yeah, like everyone was transported back to however old they were in 2004. I just think it takes such a special song for that many people to be transported when they hear it. And Yeah, it's that bitch.
She really is that girl. But we've talked about Burn a lot because that was obviously another huge song of the year from Usher. This one was actually co-written by Usher, Brian Cox, and Jermaine Dupri. It was the second single off Confessions. Obviously, it was supposed to be the first single. It was number one on the charts for 8 non-consecutive weeks. It was certified 4x platinum. And it was the second best single in the United States behind Yeah. So once Burn topped the charts, this gave Usher the distinction alongside the Beatles to be one of two groups or artists to have two singles occupying the top two spots on the Billboard year end. Pretty incredible. During an early session for this album, Usher, Jermaine Dupri, Brian Cox, they talked about, let's say, a situation which later became the subject matter of Burn. And at the time, Usher was in a relationship with TLC's Chilli, and they had been together for 2 years, and it was starting to, quote unquote, flame out, if you will. And Usher recalled, they were like, yo, you gotta let that burn. And then I was like, wait, that's a song right there. And that's when they kind of started writing. Usher and Chilli did eventually break up. And it was later revealed that Chilli actually broke up with Usher because of cheating allegations. But because of the lyrics of the song, everyone thought it was the other way around.
Usher.
Of course. But ultimately, Jermaine Dupri, for this song and also Confessions Part 2 confessed that his personal life is the real backstory of those songs.
My confessions, just when I thought I said all I can say, my chick on the side said she got one on the way.
So like the chick on the side said she's got one on the way.
Yeah.
We all were kind of giving Usher a side eye in the beginning. And then finally, Jermaine Dupri came forward and said, you know, this was something that happened with me. And I think for Burn, they took some inspiration from Usher's own experience along with that of Jermaine Dupri and his personal life.
I didn't realize that it was Jermaine Dupri's life, too. I thought it was just straight up Usher just admitting that he's a piece of shit.
Well, I think he does have those tendencies as well.
It was just so autobiographical. But Burn, it's such a fun song to sing along to.
How about that final pre-chorus bridge?
I'm twisted because one side of me is telling me that I need to move on. On the other side, I want to break down and cry.
I just love when it kind of breaks from the standard tone of the song. It's so good. So good.
He is just smooth like silk, that Usher.
Truly.
Even 20 years later. Should I move on to our next one?
Our final honorable mention.
Our final honorable mention, our closer, if you will. And we're going punk with it. It is Numb by Linkin Park. Because obviously I'll take any excuse I can to talk about punk. So this was the third single from Linkin Park's studio album, Meteora. And this is the closing track on the album, the last song. So how fitting that we made it the closer of our episode. What I really want to talk about, though, I mean, the song itself, freaking amazing. But I'd love to talk about the remix, Numb-Encore, the collab with Linkin Park and Jay-Z. This was a huge hit, and it was featured on the album Collision Course, and it earned them a Grammy for Best Rap-Sung Collaboration in 2006. I read that it was Jay-Z who reached out to Linkin Park to collab, but Chester, who's like the lead singer of Linkin Park, he had already been remixing and layering rap songs over Linkin Park songs for some time. So this was like a match made in heaven. They were both feeling the vibe and doing the same thing, and finally were working together to bring something to us. And initially, their idea was to create a bunch of mashups for a new show that was going to be on MTV called MTV Ultimate Mashups in 2004.
Love that.
This was also like peak mashup, I feel like.
Love
like
it.
We just learned what a mashup was in the year 2004. But instead of just reconfiguring the tracks, they decided to enter the studio and re-record some raps on top of Chester's songs from Linkin Park. So then we got Numb-Encore, and this peaked at 20 on the Billboard Hot 100. Numb did chart higher. Numb OG got to number 11, but in the UK, Numb-Encore achieved the record for the longest stay in the top 20 without ever reaching the top 10. I believe that that's just because this was such a competitive year for music. I mean, all the songs that we just talked about are life-changing soundtrack to your life type songs. I include this in that category, absolutely, but I think that's probably why it had a harder time reaching the top 10.
I loved that Collision Course album. Who knew Linkin Park and Jay-Z would like go so nicely together? Like, I just feel like that's something that we wouldn't naturally think of, just with the totally different genres of music. And then they really gave us some masterpieces on that album.
I love it so much. I feel like people are saying that about Beyonce right now because she's going into country, or when artists can do a cross genre experiment and be so successful. That's what true artistry is. I love when artists get inspiration from all different kinds of places and backgrounds and genres. It's just so exciting to me. And in 2002, Numb OG became the second song by Linkin Park to surpass 1 billion streams on Spotify. So both the original and the remix with Jay have a place in history this year, for sure. And you'll have a place in our history if you leave us a 5-star review.
Any rating or review you can leave us with kind words would just mean so much to us.
Yeah, make sure you're following us on Instagram at When They Popped Pod.
Thanks so much for listening, everybody. Bye.
Bye.